From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Fairfax, California.
Glen Park.
Fillmore.
I'm from San Jose.
I'm from the Intermission.
UCCC World.
West Oakland.
East Oakland.
Today, we're joined by special guest Anna Sale of the podcast Death, Sex, and Money, the show about the things we think about a lot and need to talk about more.
The root of all this stuff is like, how did you do this thing? You know, it's like, it's a quest to understand how life works.
Then we hear what it's like to be one of the last Irish matchmakers.
One young fella said to me one day, "Why are you making matches?" He says, "Wouldn't you buy a cigarette lighter?" He said.
And we'll go to an unusual literary event.
Are you guys ready for some porn? Let's dive in.
Death, Sex, and Money, today on Cross Currents. Joining us for today's show is Anna Sale, host of the WNYC podcast, Death, Sex, and Money. Thank you for being with us today, Anna.
Oh, so excited to be with you.
We are excited to talk to you today. So do you want to describe your show for listeners that don't know it?
Sure. Death, Sex, and Money is an interview podcast that I produce out of WNYC in New York. And guests are people who are famous, people who aren't famous, also listener stories. But all of the episodes are about what I say, the things we think about a lot, but feel like we need to talk about a little bit more. So it's into the nitty gritty of life, which, you know, you can kind of sum up with death, sex, and money.
Things we talk about a lot and need to talk about more. So we talk about it a lot
in private.
Think about it a lot
in the back of your head. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's the things that keep you up at night where you feel a little isolated, feel a little lonely, wondering how other people have dealt with this issue with relationships or this issue with money or this issue of loss. So the show is kind of around the idea is to create some community around these things that we all go through but sometimes don't feel comfortable really sharing in polite conversation. So we do it on the podcast.
All right. And you used to be a public radio news reporter, right?
That's right. That's right. For a long time. Started out in news. I'm from West Virginia, and I started covering news there. Then I moved to Connecticut, and then I covered politics from here in New York, both presidential politics and New York City politics. So in some ways, shifting over to Death, Sex, and Money, I think was a bit of a reaction to some of the artifice of politics and wanting to actually talk to people about the things that were motivating them or really going on in their lives and not the story that they were wanting to tell that was safe and politically comfortable.
Mm. All right. Well, here's one thing I bet will remind you of working in public radio. We're in our fall membership campaign right now.
Woo-hoo!
Remember those?
Yes. Listener support's the best.
Listener support. Well, this time of year is a real special opportunity for us to hear back from the audience that we talk to every single day and feel really the affirmation from them that, yeah, we value what comes through our speakers. Yeah, we value this KALW experience. And we always say every day that we feel so happy to do our job. And we just have all this gratitude here at Cross Currents. So if you value this kind of experience, you value the reporting that you hear on Cross Currents, you value us bringing on Anna Sale on Cross Currents, give us a call right now. Become a member. Renew your membership. Make a donation at 800-525-9917 or head over to klw.org. But now let's dig into the show. So we've chosen an excerpt from your podcast, Death, Sex, and Money, Anna. It's from your interview with Chaz Ebert, the wife of the late film critic Roger Ebert. They had a beautiful love story cut short by Roger's illness. He had cancer of the thyroid and salivary glands, which caused him to lose the ability to speak towards the end of his life. So let's take a listen.
Chaz Ebert stopped practicing law when she married Roger and ran the business side of things for him. They worked side by side throughout their marriage. As Roger became sicker and was only able to communicate through a computer, Chaz's role expanded.
At some point, he asked me to be his voice.
So we would do some things on the computer, and then he would say, but I want you to say this. It's important for you to say this part, you know? And so we, when he was very sick, it felt like we became one person. I didn't feel the boundaries that you feel with two people. And I know those boundaries so well because when he got better and he got stronger, those boundaries were resurrected. Huh. And I became my own person again, and he became his own person. But the period where we became one was a very interesting period when I think back on it, because I didn't realize that that's what was happening. I don't even know how to explain it. But I actually did feel him in my soul when we became one person.
What changed between you two when he was no longer able to talk to you with his voice?
Almost nothing, because Roger and I developed almost a mental telepathy. Mm-hmm. We were so in tune with each other that we actually could speak to each other without words or without even being in the same room.
Like a deep ability to understand what he was prompting, like what he wanted to communicate?
I don't know. To me, I actually heard his voice in my head.
Really?
Yeah. And I know that happened sometimes when he was in the hospital. I would wake up in the middle of the night and I would call the hospital and I would say, oh my God, he is so cold. Will you please go in and put the warming blanket on him? And the nurse would come back and say, how do you know? Did he call you? And they would say, well, he couldn't call you. He can't speak. And I said, I don't know. But he just told me he was cold. Hmm. See, I have to tell you, I knew you weren't going to ask me just the standard questions. I just knew it. And I had a little trepidation because I know I'm probably going to say things here that I probably shouldn't say. But
well, let's actually pause and talk about that a bit, because in thinking about our conversation, I was wondering where those boundaries are for you, because...
No, you know what? I'm going to tell you, Anna, there are none, and that's why I was a little... No, you can just ask me anything, and if something gets too hard or too... I'll tell you.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah. When was the last time you heard his voice in your head?
Very recently. He still talks to me. Yeah, he does.
You feel his presence. And you hear it. I mean, you hear it.
Yeah, I do. You know, Anna, I have to, and I say this, I don't know why Roger and I were brought together. I do feel that there's something, it almost feels like a destiny to it, because there are some parts of our getting together that didn't make sense. Mm-hmm. And our bond was so strong that I wondered about it. I mean, and now the fact that he still is in touch with me and communicates with me, that's also, I mean, it's a wondrous thing.
Does that make you feel less sad?
It does. It's very comforting because he lets me know that he is okay. He's more than okay. He is blissful.
Because when he was nearing death, and in the documentary, it shows that he died when he was ready to go, and you
were
quite ready for him to go.
That's correct.
And do you feel like that it's been reassuring to know that he was ready?
It is so reassuring. It just makes me smile to know that he is this, I don't know what he is. I don't know what form we're in, but I know that it's something that's comforting, and it feels so natural and so normal. And I know that there are a lot of things that we shut down talking about in our society because we can't, things that we can't prove. But now I firmly, firmly believe in an afterlife.
Did you believe in an afterlife before he passed?
I don't know. I don't know what I thought happened after death. I haven't had this experience. I've lost several family members, my mother, my father, two brothers and two sisters. And the rest, I haven't had an experience like this, like I'm having with Roger, where he kind of reports back. So I don't know what I thought about the afterlife. I have zero fear of death now, zero. What I do talk about with my children and grandchildren is living. We don't talk about death so much as living and telling them to do, you know, find their passion in life and live it. Because time, you know, we don't know how much time is promised to us.
That's Chaz Ebert, Roger Ebert's wife. A little less than a year before his death, Roger wrote a blog post titled Roger Loves Chaz. Her love was like a wind forcing me back from the grave. Does that sound too dramatic? You were not there, Roger wrote.
You're listening to Cross Currents on KALW. I'm Hannah Baba here with Anna Sale, host of the WNYC podcast, Death, Sex, and Money. Anna, that was a gorgeous story. When she was describing this form of communication with her husband, that was really kind of hard to believe. Did you think that, okay, I'm gonna press her to get to the bottom of this? Or is this something that you cannot get to the bottom of? Or what do you do?
Well, I thought that, I haven't heard that interview for a bit. So listening back, it kind of brings me back to the moment we were having our conversation. And she was, you hear it in the interview, there's a moment where she sort of pauses and says, like, I don't know if I want to say all this out loud because I know it doesn't sound believable,
right,
or it's not safe or you know, not grounded in the ways that we typically talk about death on public radio or anywhere else. But she, and so we sort of paused while we were talking. And I said, is this, you know, comfortable? And she said, you know, I want to say what I'm experiencing. And so for me, what that episode was about was the experience of the, you know, the first, it had been just over a year since he died when we talked. And it's that experience of widowhood and loss when it's immediate and you're, and what she was feeling and experiencing. I've never lost a partner of many years, so I don't know, you know, there's, I'm not going to say whether I agree with her or not or what, but that's what she was feeling. That's what she experienced. And she felt that comfort of having him with her still. So I actually really thought it was brave for her to open up and talk about her experience of losing Roger and still feeling him. And the response to that episode was interesting because we heard from a lot of widows and a lot of widowers, people who'd lost partners, who said, you know, this is something I've felt and haven't quite been able to put words to because I don't want to sound, you know, crazy. But it was comforting for people to hear.
And like you said, she had some fear that she would say something she probably shouldn't, and she was hesitant. Do you think about your interviews that way, that you are trying to get people to say things they wouldn't normally say out loud? Is that part of the whole premise?
It's in some ways, yes, and in some ways, like, it's no, because I what I say at the beginning of every interview when we start taping is, this show is about death, sex, and money. I'm going to ask you about things in your life. If I ask you anything too personal, just tell me you don't want to talk about it. But I am going to ask you about death, sex, and money. And the idea is not to be provocative, but to get to those places in your life where other people might feel some resonance. So it's about kind of going to places that probably people aren't asked about a lot. Like a lot of, when I interviewed Jason Isbell, the musician, and his wife, Amanda Shires, one of my favorite moments is just asking them about whether they have a joint checking account or separate accounts when they married. and you know, it's interesting. It's interesting to hear people talk about how their lives actually work, the real mechanics of it. But certainly people get to draw their, you know, lines where if there's something I'm asking about that they don't want to talk about, I don't go there.
How do you get them to open up, though? Like, it's one thing to say, it's okay to ask me about this, but then they be quiet, and then you have to kind of access that. How do you do that?
I think one thing I've found in doing interviews is it's not so much like, thinking the strategy of where to press and where to probe. It's more what happens when I'm interviewing someone and listening. You heard there in that Chaz Ebert episode, one of the things about death, sex, and money is there's some space while people are coming up, you know, thinking about their answer. There's pauses. And I think that something happens, whether you're talking to a radio interviewer or talking to someone you love, where you feel deeply listened to, that you share more. And the other thing I've sort of noticed is just what happens when someone says something like, you know, that's when I lost my partner of so many years. When you just ask the question, what was that like? You get really interesting answers.
Oh, that is Anna Sale. So many questions, so little time. We will come back to you and ask you some more about death, sex, and money. But for now, we want to remind our listeners that we are in our fall membership campaign. We are almost towards the end, and we got a goal, and we want to reach it, and that can only happen with your help. Make a contribution right now. Our phone volunteers are over there hoping and dreaming for a call from you, the listener, right now to support Cross Currents, and tell them why you listen. That would also be interesting for us to know. You know, when you call in with your donation at 800-525-9917, tell them why you listen to KALW, what you listen to. We really love to bring you new voices from podcast world. You know, we're a public radio station, we are broadcast radio, but we don't feel this conflict between classic traditional radio and the new voices in podcasting that we are hearing. We blend them. We bring these voices to our air. Podcasts like 99% Invisible, which was incubated right here, actually, at KALW. Roman Mars was part of the KALW news team. We support all kinds of expression through audio. If you support that, give us a call at 800-525-9917 or go to kalw.org. And let's see what's going on in the call room.
Hey, Hannah, this is Julie. I'm the managing producer of Cross Currents. I'm here with Jen Chien, our managing editor. Hey, Jen.
Hi.
And we have a great challenge. We have 35 minutes to get 20 calls or clicks. 800-525-9917. If we meet that goal, we get an extra $400 for local public radio. And we really want to thank a really generous listener, Patrick Kennedy, for putting that money up and giving that challenge this hour.
Thanks, Patrick. It's 800-525-9917 or KALW.org if you want to become a member today. We have Anna Sale on Cross Currents today, a new voice, an exciting new voice in podcasting. We're celebrating that new voices on the radio, women's voices on the radio,
yes,
and you
indeed.
Can add your voice. That's the KALW experience. Join in, add your voice, become a member. 800-525-9917.
I'm going to say that number one more time, 800-525-9917. And there are some great people. You can hear their voices in the phone room, actually. Some of our fantastic volunteers would like to talk to you. You can also go online, kalw.org. And we have a couple people to thank already. Steve in Berkeley and Bill Shepard in Berkeley, thank you so much. And we want to put a shout out there and a little challenge. How about Emeryville? You want to represent, or Alameda?
What about our South Bay folks? Yeah, San Mateo, Daly City. Who is listening to us out there?
Oh,
we
Union City,
love
please.
You. We love our listeners, and we love it when you participate by calling 800-525-9917 or going online to klw.org. Become a member today. Thank you so much for your support. And now, back to the show.
You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Here at KLW, we're constantly trying to push the boundaries of what we do, the boundaries of what radio sounds like, and what a radio station does in and with the community that supports it. We partner with people from the Oakland Public Library to people inside San Quentin Prison. We do all kinds of live events, and we also incubate new series and podcasts. And one of our latest projects is a podcast called The Specialist. It's a show about work you don't think about and the people who do it. It's produced by KALW's Casey Miner. We're going to play the latest episode about a specialist Casey met on a trip to Western Ireland, the type of person that is the last of their kind. I'll let her tell you more.
So I just got married. It was a really fun few days, and it turned me into an expert in things I had literally never thought about, like where tablecloths come from and the exact combination of undergarments and infrastructure you need to keep a strapless dress on all night. Today, though, I'm going to tell you a story about a different kind of wedding expert, a man who makes marriages happen. I met him a few years ago while Ryan and I were on vacation. Ryan's my husband. We weren't engaged then, and we didn't get engaged on the trip. But that did not stop this man from offering us some thoughts on marriage. I'm Casey Miner, and this is The Specialist. A few years ago, Ryan and I took this trip to Ireland. I'd never been. We got bikes, and we took these little roads through farmland and ruins. One day, a pack of horses ran alongside us, and all the time people gave us directions by saying things like, "Go up a little ways and turn right at the castle." One day, we passed this billboard. It was a little weathered, but defiantly hallmarky pink, advertising the town's world-famous annual matchmaking festival. It happens every September. 60,000 people come from all over the world to this tiny town that normally has just 800 residents. The main attraction? The matchmaker, a man named Willie Daly. I got a little obsessed with finding him. I tried. I called, I emailed, I called again, but I wasn't getting anywhere. It was June, the festival wasn't on, and because I was on vacation and not a deadline, I let it go. We got back on the bikes and headed to a town called Kilfenora. We got to a hostel, and the owner told us that we were in luck because that very night, there was a live band and dancing in the barn next door. At some point, the band called a man up on stage. "Willie Daly," they said. "Is Willie Daly here to come and do a dance?" I couldn't believe it, but there he was. Gray hair, gray beard, and kind, crinkly eyes, sitting by the bar with a young woman he said was in town looking for love. I introduced myself and asked for an interview, and the next day I rode my bike to the horse farm his family runs, just a few miles from where we were staying.
Yeah, well, my name is Willie Daly. I'm known as a traditional Irish matchmaker. That entails finding wives for men and finding husbands for girls.
Willie Daly's in his early 70s. He thinks. There's a story about how the priest who baptized him was a little too fond of drink. He says he set up thousands of marriages. Now, in both cases, the records aren't official, so he can't be sure. He's one of the last people like this, the last traditional matchmakers.
I've started about 46 years ago now. I've had a good lot of success, you know. In the very early years, to be nearly 100% success.
He walked me into the kitchen and poured me a coffee.
We can sit down inside.
There were posters on the walls from old matchmaking festivals and a piece of paper titled Matchmaking Application Form a retired teacher once filled out, stating her preferences for a mate, non-smoker, social dancer. Willie told me that in the past, most people called matchmakers because they wanted to have families, and finding partners wasn't easy.
The Habit family was a big issue for people in Ireland. You know, it is a very strong tradition, having children, we'll say, you know, just to continue the family name, and especially in rural Ireland.
Willie Daly himself met his former wife through a matchmaker, and one of his daughters helps carry on the tradition now. But things have changed a bit since he started.
One young fella said to me one day, he said, "What would you want? Why are you making matches?" He says, "Wouldn't you buy a cigarette lighter?" He said, he thought us were making matches to light cigarettes, you know. So it is a little confusing for certain people.
But people still seek out the matchmaker and the most amazing tool he has, his book. It's an old, thick, brown tome bound together with leather, like something you'd open to cast a spell.
I don't open it much anymore because it falls all over the place, you know. So it's just full of names of people that are married.
And people who wanted to get married. His grandfather started using it in 1860. Then his father, then him, now his daughter.
It's considered a very lucky book now. If you touch the book, we'll say, with both hands, we'll say, you're supposed to be married and in love and married inside of 9 months or 6 months, you know. If you're already married and you touch the book with your, you know, with both hands again, you know, you'll recreate the first 3 weeks of your honeymoon. Even if you're married 50 or 60 years, that's a lot of people are. So they get very excited that they're going to have that nice feeling that they had in the first 2 weeks of their honeymoon.
He also told me that if you sit on the book and you're wearing a miniskirt,
you'll get lucky straight away.
Did you tell the girls that?
I do.
Willie Daly, pragmatist.
Now, if I were finding a man for you, I'd get you a kind of a fairly strongish enough build of a man with blonde hair. Probably blue eyes, maybe not about your own height, maybe a little less taller than you. But strong, wide shoulders, you know, and a nice round face, very happy kind of a face, you know, very distinct features, you know. That'd be the physical side of it. Would you like someone like that now, would you think?
Maybe.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, just for the record, Ryan, my husband, is probably half a foot taller than I am, dark hair. Now, I must tell you truthfully, I think I touched the book. I didn't do it in a ritualized way. I can't remember if I used one or two hands, and I wasn't recording. But I think I touched it. I didn't use a matchmaker to meet Ryan. Or, well, maybe I did. We met online, so some combination of an algorithm and good timing put us in front of each other and encouraged us to stick around. Without that exact combination of circumstances, it might never have happened. Speaking only for myself, I do think there's a bit of magic involved.
By the authority vested in me, by the two of you.
Ryan proposed to me a little over a year after our Ireland trip, and last month we made it official.
As the solemnizer of this blessed occasion, I happily pronounce you husband and wife.
It's been 2 years since I spoke with Willie Daly, but from what I can tell, the festival and his matchmaking services are both still in demand. The festival goes through October 4th of this year if you're going to Ireland. It's on Twitter at Lisdoon Festival. And speaking of carrying on traditions, before I left his kitchen, Willie offered to share another one with me, a musical one.
There's a song. I'll sing it for you now. I'll get my guitar. I'll do a song for you. This is a story of a young girl.
He left the room, got his guitar, came back, and very enthusiastically played me this song. I think it speaks for itself, so I'm just going to play it for you. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next month with more specialists.
Well, an old man came cold to me, hey, hitting the Durham bar. Well, an old man came cold to me, me being young. Well, an old man came cold to me, damn nearly smothered me, mates, when you're young. Never wait and old man, cause he got no fluorophil diddle, hi hooram ha. Got no fluorophil diddle, hi hey. Well, he's got no fluorophil diddle.
That piece was sound designed by Seth Samuel, who also wrote the theme music. You can hear full episodes of The Specialist on iTunes. Just subscribe or find links to back episodes at kalw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba, and joining us for this special live one-hour edition is Anna Sale, host of Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC. Thanks again for being with us, Anna.
Thank you for having me. I loved that story.
Isn't it beautiful? I wonder if you could get that man, the matchmaker, in studio with us, where would you take the conversation next for Death, Sex, and Money?
I don't know. I can't stop thinking about that book. I would just make him bring the book.
Uh-huh.
For starters. Yeah.
Well, it seemed that marriage, right? He's dealing with marriage. Is that closer to the death or sex or money?
I feel like marriage is in the sex category. Mm-hmm. I think of sex really broadly and meaning our relationships and our lives.
So would he fit within your show structure?
Oh, yeah.
And what would you ask him?
Absolutely. Well, I think it's like the short skirt detail. I would ask him about that.
Mm.
If that's how his tips have changed over the years of matchmaking, and incorporating different fashion trends and what to do if you're trying to match a lady who doesn't like to wear short skirts.
Aha. That would be really interesting to hear and to hear what he has to say. Well, The Specialist is a podcast that just recently launched here at KLW. Anna, your home base, WNYC, has a great track record with successful podcasts. So I'm wondering, what do you think about the relationship between radio, traditional broadcast radio, and this new generation of shows that aren't really necessarily made for radio broadcast?
I think it's really exciting. And I'm just going to, since it's the pledge drive, I'm going to just give a shout out to KALW, because I think you have been a real model for other public radio stations about how to support creative entrepreneurial audio producers who want to create podcasts, and then making sure they can help find audience by putting some of it on the radio, like Roman Mars, as you mentioned earlier, and then Casey's podcast, The Specialist. But I think it speaks a lot to, you know, people who love public radio and love their public radio station, they're drawn to compelling audio. And so I think it makes a lot of sense that public radio stations are investing in podcasts, because the way we're listening is changing. I know just for me, I'm listening to a lot more on-demand audio in terms of podcasts, whether I'm on the subway underground where I can't get a radio signal. But definitely, like, once I kind of realized that I could listen to what I wanted to listen to when I wanted to listen to it, it's changed my listening habits. I still listen to the broadcast radio, but I listen to a lot of podcasting as well.
And what does Anna Sale listen to?
My favorite podcast right now. Okay, let's see. I'm going to look on my phone right now. I listened to Mary Carr on Fresh Air this morning on my way into work. Mary Carr, the memoirist. It was an incredible conversation. So I still love my public radio shows. I listen to Reply All from Gimlet, the podcasting company. I listen to let's see, what else do I have? There's a great podcast out of Vermont called Rumble Strip, and it's a storytelling podcast by this great audio producer named Erica Heilman. And they're just very in-depth profiles of people who live near her in Vermont. It's just really compelling storytelling. I listen to the Long Form podcast, which is an interview show of long-form writers and media makers. It's primarily magazine writers and writers of books produced here out of New York. But I just love hearing people talk about not only the craft of writing, but also how they got from a kind of a nugget of a curiosity to doing, you know, long-form investigations or long-form profiles. Those are my favorites right now, I think, of course, along with This American Life. Still listen to every This American Life that comes out every week.
And how did you get your show started at WNYC? How does one do that? Did you just go up to them and say, I have this idea? Or
It actually was even cooler than that. I was covering politics at the time, and WNYC said to everybody who worked at the station that they were looking for new show ideas and they were going to have a contest. So they gave us a sort of entry form and guides to the questions we needed to answer for what our podcast was going to be and why it needed to be in the world and how it would be produced. And I entered the contest. And I really think... I've said this to my bosses because I think particularly as a woman media maker, to have someone say, like, it's your homework to write down your dream job. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't have to barnstorm anyone's office door and say, let me change my job and let me make my podcast. He said, here's your window. Are you going to jump through it? And I did. And it's been really, it's also a great thing to get to learn how to, you know, to invent your podcast when you're surrounded by people who really know what they're doing in producing audio. So my desk is, you know, a few feet from Radiolab producers next to Studio 360 engineers. And
just the energy that comes from them, you know.
Yeah, and problem solving. My mm-hmm. God, I had so many questions when I was starting the podcast. And so it was a real gift to get to be among a community of audio producers who could help.
So you interview famous, influential people, but you also interview ordinary people, if that's okay to say. Mm-hmm. I wonder what your pre-interview process is like. Who gets to be on your show? Do you just have this gut instinct of who's going to be good, or do you have a method?
I'm trying to develop a method, but really it's so much about gut. It's so much around, does this person have a compelling story that's different enough that's going to make you want to listen, has a bit of a beginning, middle, and end to make an episode make sense, have something that has changed in their life from the beginning to the end, so you go somewhere in an episode. But it's really hard to predict, you know, the talky people who are great talkers, you can sort of tell that they'll be good on the radio.
Right.
But I also love the quiet people who, when you ask them a question, you get to hear all the things they've been thinking about while letting everybody else jabber on. So I also really liked having couples together. I liked hearing people's stories bounce off one another.
And well, I want to ask you more about that in a little bit. But again, I want to remind our listeners that it is our fall membership campaign. Give us a call at 800-525-9917 right now and make a donation, make a contribution to KALW at 800-525-9917 and KALW.org. Anna Sale, you want to get in on this action?
Yeah, I just remind everybody that pledge drives, they're a moment when you get to think about your relationship to your public radio station, and it's cool. It's cool that you turn on your radio, you get to hear what Cross Currents is doing, you get introduced to new podcasts, you get to hear the latest audio inventions, and we rely on you to help pay for it. I was like, KALW, one of the oldest public radio stations in the country, and so you have both this proud history plus this spirit and culture of innovation, and I just think that's worth supporting. So pitch in what you can, join with your fellow listeners. I've got the phone number. It's 888-525-9917.
800-525-9917 or KALW.org. And we're going to check in with our managing producer, Julie Kane, and Cross Currents managing editor, Jen Chien, to see where we are.
Thanks, Hannah. Now, we've got a listener challenge this hour, and it looks like we've got 15 calls or clicks to go in that challenge. That's $400 on the line. $400 more support for your local public radio. Become a member and help us towards that goal. 800-525-9917 or KALW.org. We have 20 minutes to make that challenge, and I really feel like we can do it. I know that you're going to be able to help us make that goal, and $400 extra for us is really quite a lot. We can really do a lot with that. I want to thank a couple people who have pitched in: Joe Thomas from San Francisco, Carla and Peter Dalton from Berkeley, Cy Grossman from Berkeley. Thank you so much. Berkeley, you are representing. I'm very proud. That's where I'm from. 800-525-9917.
You know, Anna Sale was just talking about how KALW invests in podcasts, invests in new projects, yeah. and invests in the compelling audio that everyone wants to hear, whatever the format. We invest our time, our energy, our minds, and our hearts to bring that to you. Why not invest some of your resources back into this vibrant community radio station that's here for you every day? Give us a call, 800-525-9917, and let us know you're out there. Let us know that you appreciate what we do here. 800-525-9917 or KALW.org.
And we're going to go back to the show, but we just want to thank you very much for your support. 800-525-9917. Back to you, Hannah.
All right. Thank you, ladies. Well, Anna Sale, I want to ask you, between death, sex, and money, which of the three do you find you have the hardest time talking about?
In interviews, well, personally, I have the hardest time talking about money. Mm. And that actually, that sort of tracks with in interviews. It's a really hard thing to talk about openly, I think, because we only feel comfortable talking about money when we know how we relate to the other person we're talking to, you know, thinking that they're on similar grounding. Mm. And often when we have conversations about money, there's shame about not having enough or shame about feeling like you have more than you earned. But I really think those conversations are so important, not so much around talking about, you know, the dollar amounts of what this person earns versus another person earns, but talking about our emotional relationship to money and talking about how one of my favorite episodes was about a woman in her 50s who was priced out of her Brooklyn apartment after more than 10 years. And I think that's an experience that a lot of people can relate to now in American cities. And hearing about the difficulty that she had talking about that with her neighbors, people who'd been a part of her life for years, because it was embarrassing. So I think opening up those conversations about money is important.
And what about the death? Do you find it's surprising? I would think death would be the hardest one for people to talk about, but you're saying money is hard as well?
I mean, death certainly, when you're talking to someone about a loss that they've had, if they've lost someone that they loved that was in their life, that's difficult to talk to. You know, it's those interviews, they're best when there's a little bit of distance where it's not in the middle of a trauma. Mm-hmm. Thinking about your own death and your own mortality, I think often if it's not someone who's in the midst of a health crisis or has had a close call, it can feel pretty intellectual and abstract.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about the third one in this next story. Our next story deals, with sex, but it takes place in a bookstore. Reporter Hannah Kingsley Ma will tell us just what that means. And a note to our listeners, the language in this story might not be suitable for young listeners.
When I first started working at the Booksmith, the local independent bookstore a couple blocks from my apartment, it was a lot like what I expected it to be. Book lovers browsing, regulars coming in for their daily newspaper, intimate author readings, you know, all that wholesome bookstore stuff. So imagine my surprise when one night, all the shelves in the back were pushed aside, 200 or so people filed in, and Baruch Porras Hernandez welcomed the crowd with this.
Are you guys ready for some porn? Let's dive in.
Welcome to Shipwreck, San Francisco's premier erotic fan fiction competition, wherein six writers take a revered text from the canon and turn it into something totally demented. If you don't believe me, these generally are the most common audience reactions. For those less acquainted with internet subculture, a brief explanation. Fan fiction is essentially when readers create new, unauthorized narratives for famous protagonists, giving them a life of their own. You might have even read some without knowing it. 50 Shades of Grey started out as Twilight fan fiction, so wrap your head around that.
On the internet, in the fan fiction community, a relationship is called a ship. So obviously, shipwreck is the joke. We're taking characters, we're asking people to ship them with somebody else, and we're turning it into a train wreck.
That's my coworker Amy Stevenson. She's the events coordinator at the Booksmith. She and her friend Casey Childers started Shipwreck. They came up with the idea in a bar in Hayes Valley. It was born in part out of contempt for one literary classic, Catcher in the Rye.
I had to read that in high school, and I remember thinking, like, this sucks. I hate this character. I don't understand anything about this book. We got to write, you know, make a show about that book where we talk back to it.
Talking back to revered classics like Salinger's Grumpy Tale of Teen Angst or The Great Gatsby or Moby Dick or Pride and Prejudice, that's what Shipwreck aims to do, with the help of a whole lot of dick jokes. The comedy is largely unrestrained, except for a couple of important ground rules.
We want this to be a safe space, and we have definitely turned back pieces and asked people to rework them.
Everything described has to be entirely consensual, and every character must be of consenting age. Other than that, it's pretty open. Inclusivity is really important to Childers and Stevenson. It's basically why they created the thing in the first place.
I grew up, like, poor and not in a very educated family. We didn't have a lot of books, and bookstores were very intimidating to me. And it's really important to me as the events coordinator at Booksmith to have a program that's accessible to everybody, that they feel like they can engage with the canon and the classics and even contemporary literature in a way that's fun and engaging.
At tonight's Shipwreck event, on a slightly sweaty spring day, there are a lot of people in the room. Everyone's chatting a little too loudly, that thing people do when they are both nervous and excited.
And remember, folks, we take smut very seriously here. So if you're talking during my story, I will stare at you. And just quietly stare at you till you shut the f*** up. All right, more sex.
That's Baruch again. He's the in-house thespian. His job is to read all six entries so that the competition is anonymous. After he's done, the audience votes on which entry they like the best. Baruch's deadpan delivery is remarkable, considering he has to read lines like this.
Nor did she possess much skill in that most intimate of marital tasks, laundry. Or only slightly less important, butt stuff.
The featured book this evening is Little Women. It's a coming-of-age story set against the backdrop of the Civil War. For tonight's fanfiction, we zoom into the future and imagine the characters as grown adults. Like Catcher in the Rye, Amy Stevenson has strong feelings about the book.
This is the most objectively boring book.
Yep. The audience is a mixed bag. Some newbies, some seasoned Shipwreck goers. I ask Sarah Stanton, who has been to 11 shows, if she has a standout moment.
Conan the Barbarian's penis getting frozen inside the White Witch, and her saying, "It is always winter inside my vagina, but never Christmas."
I seek out a couple on the other side of the room, Kimmy Johnson and her boyfriend Dan. Dan preferred not to share his last name. It turns out that they actually met at Shipwreck.
Kimmy went with friends, and I knew some of her friends, and so we were hanging out, and then we started hanging out more, and now we're dating.
No. Dorian Gray's portrait was being, like, by a cubist nude, and I made eyes at him, and that's what happened, because this is Shipwreck.
How do you guys tell people, when people are like, so how did you meet? What do you say?
I'm like, what's your favorite classic literary novel? Okay, now imagine a butt plug in that. That's where I met Dan.
Dan meditates on Shipwreck's appeal, besides finding romance.
I don't know if everyone feels this way, but I definitely had this, like, desire that I was reading this, like, you know, book for, like, junior English class that, like, all of a sudden, like, wild and crazy sex would erupt, because that's certainly where my brain was when I was 16. But it never happened. But with Shipwreck, it does.
Kimmy chimes in.
Let's look at Little Women. Like, as someone who read this book when she was, like, 10 years old, there's clearly a lot of hidden sexual tension. You can't talk about becoming a woman without addressing, like, the whole, you know, sexuality part of it. So Shipwreck just takes it to the extreme, and it's wonderful.
Make no mistake, Shipwreck peddles in extremity. It's gross.
Mistress is always overturning the butter, isn't she? The three servants holding Sally in place nodded. We'll show her how to churn the butter just right.
sometimes way too gross for me. But even if it is gross and destructive, shipwreck goers are kind of doing what our high school teachers told us to do, critically engaging with the text. There's no right way to relate to books, and shipwreck underscores this idea through writing about Muppet sex, glitter cannon orgasms, and shocking acts between Ayn Rand characters. This may seem ridiculous to some who consider themselves serious readers, but this is the largest group of people I've ever seen in a bookstore, enjoying themselves raucously. What that says about us, I'm not too sure. And honestly, I don't really want to know.
Ooh, that piece was produced by The Litography Project, your guide to the literary Bay Area. I'm Hannah Baba. This is Cross Currents. And with me today on the line is Anna Sale, host of the show Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC. Anna, what did you think?
I loved, it's gross. I loved that line. I laughed out loud.
And so speaking of, you know, she said, you know, too gross, it might be too much for some people. For Death, Sex, and Money, is there a point where you stop? Like, what is your red line that you will not go beyond in your interviews? Hmm. Or is there such a thing?
We haven't done many explicit episodes. I mean, the show is really about relationships and life, so it doesn't get into really graphic sex or anything like that. But as far as like emotional interviews and emotional terrain, I pay a lot of attention to whether the person I'm interviewing feels like we're in comfortable territory or not. You know, you don't want to make someone walk out of a studio and feel like they, talked about things they hadn't really thought through.
Hmm. And has that happened before? Have you been in a situation where the person really just was uncomfortable and you tried, but then, you know, they just did not happen? Like the interview did not happen or no?
Our episode that comes out next week on next Wednesday, was a really interesting process with a woman I was interviewing. She's a sex worker, and initially she got in contact and wanted to respond to one of our previous episodes and talk about her work. So we did a long, in-depth interview. And after that, she felt it sort of made her rethink some of the things in her relationship to her work. Uh-huh. And that some things shifted. And so the episode is the first interview and then a follow-up interview after some things had shifted. And it was, but in that process, we were constantly in dialogue about, you know, what was being included in an episode, what she felt comfortable with, because these are stories about people's lives. And we try to be really respectful about that.
And it's not a kind of a gotcha premise.
No.
Right.
That's not fun to listen to.
Well, some of the best Death, Sex, and Money episodes have come from this method that you have where you crowdfund. I'm thinking about funding.
You're thinking pledge drive.
I'm sorry. You crowdsource your stories.
Yes.
You kind of put the call out to your listeners, get their experiences within a particular topic, and then you share those and sometimes follow up with the people who responded. Like your episode on cheating, for example. So what other experiences are you thinking about exploring in this way, this crowdsourcing?
This has been one of the coolest things that I didn't anticipate at all when we started the show. We had an idea like maybe we'll just ask people to tell us stories about money and relationships. That was the first one we did. And we got these incredible stories from listeners and voice memos, people just recording voice recordings with their smartphones and sending it in. Mm-hmm. And then we did another one about cheating, and we did one about siblings and our relationships with our siblings and how they get quite complicated as we age, that came out this summer. The next one we're working on, we've been asking people to tell us stories about death and money. So everything from when someone unexpectedly died in their life and what happened after that to, yeah, some kind of curveball questions or stories that it's just fun because you just kind of give out this big question and seeing what comes back and hearing people just kind of telling these very intimate stories into their smartphones and sending these voice memos. It is the most fun part of the job to go through our email inbox and listen to what people are sharing with us.
And who would you just love, love, love to interview?
I get this question a lot, and it mm-hmm. changes.
Ooh. What is it now?
Well, let's see. For a long time, I would say like Bill Clinton, but I won't say that now because I don't think it would be that interesting now that we're in the political cycle. Wouldn't be a very interesting interview. I think about LeBron James a lot.
Okay,
because I just think his relationship to home and leaving and coming back, and what it was to grow up when you from such a young age. Were recognized for this just outsized talent, and how that affects the relationships you have with your friends, and I just think it's a really interesting life story.
All right, LeBron James, it is. If you're listening, death, sex, and money. Thank you so much, Anna Sell, for being with us today. We really appreciate it.
Oh, such a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, and let's throw it back to Jen Chien and Julie Kane to see how we're doing in these final minutes of Cross Currents.
Thanks, Hana, and thanks a lot, Anna. We have 3 minutes. We need 10 calls or clicks to get this extra $400 for local public radio. If you are in your car right now, ask your phone. Hey, Siri, call 800-525-9917. We will really appreciate hearing from you, Jen.
800-525-9917. You can tell Siri to call, or you can dial yourself with your own little fingers. You can also go online to kalw.org and just click on that big donate button and help us out. We want to thank Mary Weinberg of San Rafael, Christy Cole, and Sarah Ophelia Trelon, both from San Francisco, for clicking or calling this hour. I'm not sure which one. We need 10 more clicks or calls. If we get 10 more clicks or calls this hour, that's $400 more money for your local public radio.
I'm excited, but I'm nervous too. I think you can do it. I think you can until Terry Gross's voice comes on the air. 800-525-9917. 10 people. We would really love to hear from you however you want to get in touch. 800-525-9917, kalw.org.
800-525-9917. You know, in one of those last stories we heard, they talked about critically engaging with a text. Well, would you critically engage with us here at KALW? We critically engage with you every day with the kinds of stories, the kinds of shows, information, and music that we bring to you every day. 800-525-9917 or KALW.org. This is KALW in San Francisco.